Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, April 18th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. Set up at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 200. You'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, up to $500. Same thing for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box, as you know, coming up on Monday, another edition of the Monday Mailbag. So if you've got questions for me, you can reach out on Twitter at Skating Tripods or Adam at BangTheBook.com via email. Also, if you want to get on the list for notes from the show, about 200 strong with that, you can reach out to me via email, Adam at BangTheBook.com. I'll get you on the list there for the notes. My daily picks and tips piece going on every day over at BangTheBook.com, as well as daily NHL playoff picks from Parker Michaels, NBA game previews from our talented cast of writers, and also once we get to the second round, they'll be putting together their NBA series previews. Same thing for Parker with his second round primer. So lots of great stuff going on for the NBA and the NHL playoffs over at BangTheBook.com. Next week, along with the Monday Mailbag and the Bettors Box on Monday, I'll do an NFL draft podcast. I'm not sure who I'm going to have on that as of yet, but I'll record that here on Tuesday. So we'll get some prop betting thoughts and just some overall NFL draft thoughts. And of course, we'll be doing our UFC segment with Christian Pina. I'll probably recording that today for tomorrow on Bang the Book Radio. All right, so we start with the Bettors Box here. We'll take a look beyond the box score. I'll give you that exit velocity update for this week, and I'll do that every Thursday as we go throughout the season here. We'll go down the lines, look at some line moves that happened dating back to Monday, give you my pick for tonight's action, and then also a preview of five series for the weekend ahead. So let's go ahead and start with a look beyond the box score here, and maybe a little bit selfishly, but we'll start with the Indians and their sweep of the Seattle Mariners. And look, yes, I'm an Indians fan, but I've always been impartial about them on the shows and in the write-ups, both with their season win total previews and also with the daily picks piece. And I'm not just talking about this because it's the Indians, but also because the Mariners here, you know, offensively, a lot of people were expecting some regression. And that happened here on this six-game homestand. They faced the pitching staffs in not just the American League, but all of Major League Baseball. In those six games for the Mariners, they batted 175 with a 227 on base percentage, 325 slugging percentage, had a 72-13 strikeout to walk ratio in those six games. Prior to that, as they started 13-2 on the season, they had a 295 batting average with a 370 on base, 565 slugging percentage, a 139-61 strikeout to walk ratio in those 15 games. So look, when you face good pitching, your offense probably isn't going to do as much. When you face bad pitching, as the Mariners did early on in the season, your offense does quite a bit better. So this isn't a big surprise, but it's important context at the start of the season here, where sometimes you'll get a team that goes through a prolonged offensive slump because of who they're playing against. If they go in the tank against teams like Toronto or, you know, Texas or somebody like that, that's a little bit different. But facing the Indians and the Astros, that's a challenge for any offense. I don't care who you are. The Indians and Astros very capable of shutting down the Yankees or the Red Sox, something like that. To do it to the Mariners, not a big surprise. But you want to factor that context into the equation here, and I would expect the Mariners in the near future to get back on track offensively. A lot of people are going to look at this and say, oh, well, they were overachieving. They were at a level they couldn't stay at to a degree. But also they faced, you know, five of the top 10 starting pitchers in the American League in those two series with Verlander, Cole, Bieber, Carrasco, and Bauer. So those guys are going to shut down a lot of good lineups. So don't overreact to this six-game homestand here for the Mariners and how offensively inept they actually were. Look, like I said, you face Bauer, Bieber, and Carrasco, 19 2/3 innings, 12 hits, 2 runs allowed, 8 walks, 25 strikeouts. That's the reason why the Indians are staying alive here so far with this relatively inept offense, is that their starting rotation is just that good. And also their bullpen, pretty strong to this point. Saw Nick Whitgren throw 2 solid innings, picking up the save in yesterday's game. Indians bullpen, 268 ERA, 375 FIP, 433 XFIP, 81.2% left on base percentage. So some regression will be coming for this group, but Keep in mind here that XFIP is all out of whack this season with the juiced baseballs. So XFIP just not a good indicator for a lot of different things here this season, bullpens especially, because some of those guys may have higher fly ball rates, but they're not going to give up home runs to the degree that starting pitchers do. So you really don't want to look at XFIP almost at all here this season. Looking at the Mariners and their pitching side of things here, you know, Yusei Kikuchi and Mike Leake and Eric Swanson actually pitched pretty well in this series here. 18 innings, 15 hits, 6 runs allowed, 3 walks, 14 strikeouts. It's hard to get swept when you get that kind of pitching line from your 3 starters, but that was the case here for the Mariners. And, you know, in watching some of their games here recently and in watching this bullpen a little bit in this series, they've got a decent bullpen. Brandon Brennan's got really good stuff. That changeup is a plus pitch. Anthony Swarzak's had some success at the big league level. Connor Sadzek looks pretty decent. Zach Roscup is okay. Roenis Elias looks okay. I think this Mariners pitching staff may be a little bit underrated. So as people look to fade this offense here, I think this pitching staff, in particular at home, in the safety net of T-Mobile Park, I think this pitching staff is a little bit underrated by the markets out there. I thought the Mariners were underrated coming into the season. I'm upset with myself for not playing that season win total over. But, you know, I think the Mariners right now, a little bit better than people expected in all facets of the game. You got to give Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto a lot of credit for that. I think this team may have a little bit more staying power than we originally thought. And it's important to talk about things like that because, again, they just went 0-6 on this homestand. So a lot of perception bias coming into the equation with the Mariners right now with some of their recent results. The Yankees swept that 2-game series from the Red Sox. Look, all the talk is about Chris Sale right now, and I understand that. And Nate Eovaldi was okay yesterday. Eduardo Rodriguez hasn't been very good. I want to talk about this Boston offense. What the hell is going on with this group? 3 runs scored on 11 hits in this series. Their offense for the season now, 229 batting average, 300 on base, 374 slugging percentage. This is not at all what we would expect from the Boston Red Sox. And it's not a contact quality thing. They're 4th in Major League Baseball right now in average exit velocity at 89.7 miles per hour. They're trailing the Yankees. We have a 251, 338, 457 slash. The Rays, who have a 269, 346, 454 slash. And the Brewers, who have a 263, 344, 475 slash. And here's the Red Sox, 4th in exit velocity with a 229 batting average, a 300 on base, a 374 slugging percentage. So what's the problem? Well, first of all, they're hitting a lot of ground balls this year at high velocities. They're 3rd in ground ball exit velocity. Only Oakland has hit more ground balls so far this season. Of course, they've played the 2 extra games there in Japan. But Boston, 14th in average exit velocity on fly balls and line drives. And that's a problem right there. The league batting average on fly balls and line drives this season is .456. The Red Sox are 28th at .392. League average weighted on base average on fly balls and line drives, .566. Boston 26th in weighted on base average at .485. So this is a team that needs to start elevating the baseball a little bit more, but also a team in line for a lot of positive regression on those batted ball types. This is not a Red Sox offense that will continue to play this poorly. Obviously, weather plays a little bit of a factor in cold weather cities here in the month of April, but with the juiced baseballs, as things warm up, the Red Sox offense is going to get this thing turned around. How quickly that happens, I'm not entirely sure, but I can promise you that will be the case. It's a very thick limb to go out on, obviously, but again, like I'm saying here, they are well below league average in a lot of categories here so far. So my guess is that their offense gets really, really white hot for about 2 or 3 weeks. They make up all the ground that they're trailing right now. So watch out for that. If you start to see signs from this Red Sox offense, jump on that over train, jump on that team total over train, because this is an offense that, you know, I talk about degrees of regression. It's a very important betting concept here for me as it pertains to sabermetrics. Their degree of regression is very, very high offensively. They will get better, and it will happen in a hurry. So we'll wait and see when that actually starts to take place. But the Red Sox offensively here, I would expect some very quick gains in the very near future with that group of hitters. One more series to talk about here beyond the box score. the Cubs and their sweep of the Miami Marlins. The Marlins only scored 2 runs in this series. They're only 3-10 at home now, and that's a problem because if the Marlins want to win games this year, at home is where they're going to have to do it. The market has taken a bath backing the Marlins at home here so far. So we'll get to a point in time here very soon where the Marlins will be quite underrated at home. Right now, that's really not the case because we're seeing a lot of line movement on them, and offensively, they're just not particularly good. Yu Darvish, still not a great start for him. He did get the win, did only give up 2 runs, but allowed 8 base runners in 5 2/3, had walk problems once again. Not a real great look for Darvish, even though he did only allow the 2 runs. I'd be very careful with him over his next few starts. Probably still look to fade him in those outings. Marlins, not good against Jose Quintana or Cole Hamels. 14 innings pitched, 15 strikeouts there, 10 hits, didn't draw a walk, didn't score a run. The Marlins have been really bad against lefties here so far this season. I believe their strikeout rate now up in the 32 or 33% range against lefties. That's not good for them because typically they're a right-handed heavy lineup. They have some measure of success against left-handed pitching. That has not been the case here this season so far at all. It's just a bad look all the way around for the Marlins offensively. Now, from a pitching standpoint, Sandy Alcantara, I've talked about him a few times here on the show so far, talked about him in my write-ups for his starts over at bangthebook.com. So far this season, he has allowed 11 hits with an exit velocity of 80 miles per hour or lower. Second on that list is Pablo Lopez, who has allowed 9 hits on batted balls of 80 miles per hour or lower. Nobody else in Major League Baseball has allowed more than 6 such hits. And again, when you look at exit velocities of 80 miles per hour or lower, league batting average is very, very small. It's in the 150 type of range. These two guys have had the worst luck when it comes to those low velocity batted balls. So I'm kind of trying to figure out why this may be. The Marlins are not a very good defensive team. They're 22nd defensive run saved, a little bit below average in ultimate zone rating. Their starters are dead last in BABIP against at .323. I don't know what's going on here with this. I don't know if it's the defensive alignment for the Marlins or what it may be. I'm going to try to look some more into this as we go forward. But when I look at guys like Pablo Lopez and Sandy Alcantara, I think these are two guys that we want to look to back here at home in the very near future. Hopefully the Marlins continue to struggle at home. We can get some better prices on these guys. But I do think that these are two guys that should wind up with some better batted ball results, specifically at home, as we go forward here. So while everyone's backing the Marlins right now and burning through their bankrolls, I'm going to wait. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to look for opportunities to play the Marlins, and specifically Alcantara and Lopez here, as I would expect some of their batted ball fortunes to regress in a positive way. Let's talk about some early season standings notes here. We got some interesting stuff to talk about. The Texas Rangers are off to a fine start. They're playing very well so far this season, but 11 of their 17 games have been at home. I think they're 10-7 on the year here so far. They're 8-3 at home, 2-4 on the road. So Arlington Park does play up Globe Life Park, whatever the hell it's called, does play up for this Texas offense, 8-3 at home, 2-4 on the road, where their pitchers are going to struggle and their offense isn't going to be as good. So when you look at what's going on with the Rangers here this season, so far, they've gotten very, very fortunate to play a lot of their games at home. When that changes, we'll see what happens with them going forward. So the Rangers, probably a fade team in my mind right now, especially when they go out on the MLB highway. The Twins and Tigers have not yet faced a left-handed starting pitcher. That's a pretty interesting little nugget here. The Nats and Reds, both 0-1 against left-handed starting pitchers. So they've only seen one. The Twins and Tigers have not seen any yet. That's kind of a detriment for the Tigers because I expected them to be a lineup that would do pretty well against left-handed starters. Haven't seen one here as of yet. When they do get one, maybe it'll be one of those times where we can play on the Tigers. But, the thing about lefties is, and I've had success with this angle before, when you face a lefty that you're not familiar with, it's a tough situation. The first and second time through the order, it can be very, very challenging. Lefties just have that unnatural arm slot because you see a righty about 72, 73% of the time. Lefties, generally have some sort of quirk to them that gets them up to the big leagues, whether it's height, whether it's tall or short, whether it's some sort of unique breaking ball, some sort of changeup, something like that. Lefties tend to be pretty difficult matchups for teams. So not having seen one here through 3 weeks of the season for the Twins and Tigers, that's a very, very interesting thing to say the least. So we'll have to wait and see how that dynamic plays out. Maybe look to play unders or something like that early on as they get accustomed to seeing that left-handed arm slot. The Cincinnati Reds here, 1-6 in one-run games so far. The Toronto Blue Jays are 1-5. The Brewers, 5-0. The Astros, 5-1. Arizona's already played 9 one-run games. It's the most in baseball. They're 4-5 there with those. But we'll start to see people playing against those Pythagorean win-loss outliers, things of that sort here. Teams that, the Brewers, for example, are 12-7 with a negative run differential. Market probably going to keep coming in against them. The Reds, as I mentioned, 1-6 here in one-run games. And also for the Reds here, they've played 14 of their 17 games against teams with 500 or better records. Now, part of that, of course, is because the Reds are 5-12, but also because they've run into some pretty good teams here in the early part of the season. They're 2-12 against teams 500 or better, 3-0 against teams with a losing record. The Rays, 14 of 18 against teams with losing records, although, again, part of that because they're 14-4 on the season. So keep an eye out for this. Some teams have played a very high level of competition so far. Other teams have not. That's going to have a pretty significant impact here on what we see with these teams in the early going. So that'll be something that you want to follow along with here as we get a greater sample size. The Braves, they're 2-7 against teams with a winning record, 7-1 against teams with a losing record. The A's, same thing, 2-7 against teams 500 or better, 9-3 against teams with losing records. And you will see this. Typically, a lot of the better teams in baseball play to around 500 against 500 or better competition and beat the hell out of the bums. A lot of teams do that. It's never a surprise when it happens. But obviously here early on in the season, if you're playing bad teams, playing good teams, you're probably not going to look as good. So you definitely want to factor strength of schedule into the equation as we keep going forward here as sample sizes get a little bit bigger. The Rockies 0-5 at Coors Field here so far. They are winless at home. One other quick note about the Brewers here, 12-4 against National League teams. They were swept by the Angels on the road in interleague play. That's not a team that they would plan for. And I've talked about this a lot with the Milwaukee Brewers here and their pitching plans and their contact management strategies and things of that sort. They know the hitters in the NL, and specifically the hitters in the NL Central, very, very well. They're not going to focus as much of their attention on these teams in the American League. So I think the Brewers potentially, maybe we saw a little bit of a sign of things to come with them being a fade team here against American League competition when it comes to interleague play. So that'll be something that I'm kind of looking at here. Maybe look to fade them some because they just won't have the same level of information, the same level of planning and preparation going into those games here against lesser teams. You know what? Furthermore, as I think about it here and as I think about this point, perhaps the Brewers are a fade team against really bad National League teams. Maybe they're a fade team against the likes of the Giants or the Marlins or something like that because they're going to prep for the teams they expect to see in the postseason and the teams in their division. So even a team like the Padres, for example, maybe that's a good team to back against the Brewers. Maybe the Diamondbacks because they're not a playoff team for this season. The problem with the Diamondbacks is they're very right-handed heavy. Brewers, a right-handed heavy starting staff. But you get the point that I'm trying to make here in that I think the Brewers focus a lot of their attention, a lot of their game planning on division rivals and potential playoff opponents. So maybe you look to fade them when they play these lesser teams and play interleague play. That could be a pretty strong angle there with Milwaukee, who, by the way, not only do they have these pitching plans for their starters, they also have 3 relievers in the top 13 in average exit velocity against. And Josh Hader's gotten even better this year, throwing harder. So the Brewers, again, their bullpen, very, very strong once again this season. Talking about juiced balls, and I had a tweet about this yesterday, pitchers on the season so far have a 195 slugging percentage. They've already hit 8 home runs. Last year, pitchers collectively hit 24 home runs with a 149 slugging percentage. So not really all that important from a betting standpoint, but it is just another example to show that something is going on with the baseballs. And in fact, J.J. Cooper, I believe over at Baseball Prospectus today, had a phenomenal piece up about how AAA teams are using the Major League Baseball balls now. And we've seen a big power explosion in AAA already so far. We have not seen it in AA or the low minors levels. So, again, more evidence to the fact that there's something going on with the baseballs here this season. All right, let's look at that weekly exit velocity update. And sample sizes are still very small, but it's important to keep these things in mind. I'll explain why as we go along here. League batting average on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour, 527. That's up 3 points from where we were last week at 524. The top five in batting average on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour, the Diamondbacks at 647, who are down 14 points from where they were last Thursday. The Mariners at 621, who are down 20 points from where they were last Thursday. The Cardinals at 597, they've snuck into the top five. The Yankees, 596, that's minus 23 points from where they were last Thursday. The Braves at 578, they sneak up into the top five. The teams that fell out of the top five, the Nationals, who are down 54 points, and the Astros, who are down 28 points. So what are we seeing here? Again, I've talked about this before. You're looking for degrees of regression. You're keeping in mind that a lot of teams and a lot of players fall within a certain range of outcomes relative to the league average. So again, the Diamondbacks and Mariners still 1-2, although I think last week it was the Mariners that was number one. It wasn't the Diamondbacks, actually. But again, the Diamondbacks down 14 points. The Mariners down 20 points. The Yankees were in the top five. They still are, but they're down 23 points. Nationals dropping 54 points. Astros dropping 28 points. So this will level out. Teams will regress to the mean. How far they regress to the mean depends on the talent level of the team, certainly. There are some sample size noise things here early on in the year. But again, the teams that were in the top five last week all dropped in batting average. All of them. All five of them. A couple newcomers got into the list, the Cardinals and the Braves. Cardinals largely doing that because they made a lot of hard contact in that series there against the Brewers, had plenty of success there. But again, I would expect these five teams to drop again going into next week, or we'll have some different teams in the top five here. The bottom five in batting average on batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour. The Tigers at 424, still at the bottom of the league, but up 31 points from last week. The Marlins at 450, up 25 points from last week. Giants at 455, they're plus 9 points from last week. Red Sox at 466, Mets at 469, both getting into the bottom five here this week. The Phillies were in the bottom five last week. They went up 52 points. They're no longer in the bottom five. Neither are the Rockies, who went up 17 points. So again, these teams at the bottom of the list are going to see positive regression. What does that mean for us? Well, you look at team total overs or unders. You look at sides with these teams. Offensively, the bottom five will get better. Offensively, the top five will get worse. This all makes perfect sense. You're going to have a lot of teams that regress into a certain range. I'll talk about that here again in a couple of minutes. From a WOBA standpoint, weighted on base average of batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour, up 2 points from last week to 668, or from 668 to 670. Again, top five, not a big surprise here. The Mariners, they dropped from 872 to 853. They dropped 29 points. The Diamondbacks to 851, they dropped 45 points. The Cardinals up 91 points to 834. Again, the Cardinals, lots of home runs in that series there against the Brewers. Miller Park playing very small. So the Cardinals make a big leap here. The Yankees down to 752, they dropped 44 points. The Dodgers at 744, they moved up 4 points. Nobody fell out of the top five in weighted on base average. All five of these teams were here last week. All five of these teams were here last week, but the Cardinals making a pretty substantial jump. Mariners and Diamondbacks and Yankees all making pretty big drops. Now, the bottom five in weighted on base average. The Tigers at 496, they moved up 27 points. Marlins, 539, they moved up 4 points. Giants, 555, moved up 32 points. Getting away from Oracle Park certainly helps with that. Red Sox, 567, they're into the bottom five. Pirates, 575, they went up 11 points. The Rays jumped 66 points, so they got out of the bottom five here this week. Now, again, why does this matter? Well, last year, The league average, weighted on base average, of batted balls of 95 plus miles per hour was 653. There were two teams that were greater than 30 points above league average. They were the Dodgers and the Yankees. Dodgers at 723, Yankees at 699. Those are two elite level lineups when healthy. Not a big surprise. But again, two teams more than 30 points away from the league average. There were five teams more than 30 points below the league average. The Giants, 599, the Marlins, 605, Royals, 611, Pirates, 614, Tigers, 616. Four of those parks are outstanding pitchers' parks that minimize power. And again, weighted on base average, a walk is worth X number of runs, a home run is worth X number of runs, but higher than the number of runs that a walk is worth. So that's where it differentiates from on-base percentage, where run values are assigned to these WOBA outcomes. You don't hit home runs at Oracle Park. You don't hit home runs at Marlins Park. You don't hit home runs at PNC Park. You don't hit a lot of home runs at Comerica Park. Kauffman Stadium, the Royals offense just blows. They're a pretty good outfield defense. So you can see why those five teams, more than 30 points below the league average. But again, only five teams, 30 points below the league average. So two teams, 30 points above, five teams, 30 points below. That means 23 teams were plus or minus 29 points from the league average. Early on in the season here, you see a lot of teams well above or well below the league average. For the most part, probably around 23 to 25 teams will be within 30 points of the league average from a weighted on base average standpoint on these high velocity batted balls. So again, that means you can play team total overs or unders. You can play sides on or against these teams because that regression is very, very likely to come. Now, you'll get it from a batting average standpoint. Last year's league batting average on batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour was 524. Two teams were more than 30 points above that. The Dodgers at 558, the Reds at 555. You know how many teams were more than 30 points off of the league batting average of 524 on high-velocity contact? Zero. The lowest was the Pittsburgh Pirates at 500. So you see the point I'm trying to make here. I know I'm giving out a lot of numbers, a lot of different conceptual things. Again, the notes, adam@bangthebook.com. But what I'm saying is that overall, on high-velocity contact, the contact that does the most damage, 95-plus miles per hour, teams fall into a certain range, all teams almost, fall into a certain range somewhere in the plus or minus 30 point area. So that's why I update this week after week after week, because we can find these outliers that we can either follow or fade from a team total standpoint or from a side standpoint with the expectation that they will get better or worse. This is part of regression analysis handicapping. This is why I use the data, the metrics, and the numbers that I use. So hopefully all of this makes sense. If you have any questions about it, at Skating Tripods on Twitter, adam@bangthebook.com via email, and also to get on these weekly notes, adam@bangthebook.com, how you hop onto that list. All right, let's take a look down the lines here, talk about some line moves from Monday till now. Monday, we saw that Luis Castillo move with the Reds against the Dodgers. That was Clayton Kershaw's first start of the year. We saw that move early in the morning, and then that line came back. We're getting a lot of buyback here on a lot of these early line moves. The arbitrage market's really, really busy right now. A lot of scalping, a lot of middling going on. Part of that because of the uncertainty that's out there in Major League Baseball right now. Some of that because of the lineup release times and, you know, people, the modeling crowd getting in once they see what the lineup actually looks like, once they get their calculated lines for that game. A lot of interesting things in the betting market where we're not seeing the ERA and XFIP line moves to the same degree. We're seeing a lot of early line moves come back up to around where the original number was. It's been a very fluid market, a very interesting market, a much different market from what we've seen over the last few years. So some of that may just be the inefficiency and the uncertainty of both bettors and the odds makers. I think a lot of that is just people scalping back and forth, playing their arbitrage opportunities. You know, it's probably one of those things where, and I've told you this before, the MLB betting market is really run by a handful of groups that do a lot of arbitrage, a lot of middling, a lot of scalping. They're going to get out in front of a number. Then they're going to risk free play back at it after pumping a lot of money into the marketplace. So we're seeing a lot of that here this year, a lot more buyback than I've typically seen. So I'm guessing that those groups are being very, very active out there right now in the betting markets. On Tuesday, we saw a little bit of money come in on Nick Pivetta. Again, a high ERA, low FIP, low XFIP guy. Not a whole lot. In fact, he got sent down after the game. So that was a pretty interesting development there for the Phillies. We saw Marlins money come in at home on Tuesday. It's come in a lot. That was against Yu Darvish. That was the Pablo Lopez start. As I mentioned, the Marlins now 3-10 at home. Eventually, people will give up on that. And that's probably going to be the time when I'll start to look to play the Marlins at home with some of those inflated underdog prices. Saw money hit the board on Robbie Ray and the Diamondbacks. It was against Max Fried and the Braves on Tuesday. The Braves market, it seems like no Braves game has been accurately priced here so far this season. We've seen big moves against them. We've seen big moves on them. That was one there on Tuesday with some underdog money coming in on Robbie Ray. Tuesday, I hope you got out in front of this one. I know we picked up a winner on this one. Wish I would have played the John Gray side as well in the article. But we saw a big John Gray move on the Rockies against Nick Margavicius and the Padres. And Margavicius wasn't even that bad in that start. Just saw some of that regression. He's still a regression candidate. Hopefully you got out in front of that one, got John Gray at plus 130. That was one where we did not see the buyback. We saw a holding position of that closing line value from the marketplace. And I hope you got in front of that. And really, that's the point of this segment, to help you isolate guys that are going to see line moves so that you can hop into the market, get the best of the number, decide if you want to buy off of it, if you want a partial hedge, if you want to hold your closing line value. That's really the point of this down-the-line segment. So what I'm trying to do with this exercise here is get it in your mind that there are certain guys that you want to look to back on the overnights right away because lines are going to move on them. We saw money come in on Shane Bieber again, and this will probably continue to happen. Shane Bieber, a guy that, you know, probably the he's not the household name of this Indians rotation, but with his different pitch usage now, he's been elevated quite a bit. That was a bad opening number with Mike Leake in the minus 120 range. Bieber and Indians money hit the board, was victorious there in that one. We saw very heavy Matthew Boyd money for the Tigers against the Pirates. Matthew Boyd, another guy like a Chris Paddock, like a John Gray, start after start, the market's backing him. Wound up being the wrong side there in that game, but I think that's four starts for Matt Boyd and four times that the market has come in on him. And this will probably keep happening. You know, I mean, the books aren't getting burned that badly by these things because it's, you know, still a team game. Ultimately, a lot of people bet on the starting pitchers, and that's what I do the majority of my breakdowns on in the article. But unless they're getting really smoked by a guy, they're not making too many adjustments here at this time of the year. So I would expect that we still continue to see that Matt Boyd money hit the board. Wednesday, we saw heavy Zach Wheeler money against Jake Arrieta and the Phillies. Wheeler's had a couple of bad outings here so far. I think the market just feels like the Phillies are a little bit overpriced right now. We're not seeing that big fade of Kyle Freeland today at Coors Field with the Phillies in town. I think part of that is because the market thinks the Phillies are a little bit overpriced. We probably saw some of that yesterday. Maybe it was a fade of Jake Arrieta as well. But I think the market believes the Phillies are a little bit of a sell-high candidate right now at this point in time. Saw a fade of Zach Godley. That was the Diamondbacks and Braves series. Zach Godley is a very big regression candidate right now, not just the ERA and FIP and XFIP metrics, but also he's had so much success on ground balls. Looks pretty unsustainable to me. He'll be a fade candidate for me going forward here as well. The market already fading him, so you don't have to wait for my article. You can just go ahead and bet against him on the overnights. We'll see what kind of price we get when I actually get around to writing the article in the morning after some of those overnight line moves have happened. So a small flip favorite situation in the Astros and the A's game yesterday. I was on the Astros. That was a loser. Frankie Montas pitched very, very well. And, of course, the A's bullpen managed to hold on to that one. But a little bit of a fade of Wade Miley there in that game. The A's also take some money against lefties with regularity. They're a very right-handed heavy lineup. So, again, another line move you can look to get out in front of. The A's against the lefty, they're going to take money in that situation. Thursday so far, we saw a heavy Mike Soroka move for the Braves and Diamondbacks finale. That was Luke Weaver in that one for the Diamondbacks, Soroka for the Braves. That was just a bad opening number. Very early start time. That game has already started as I'm recording here. But that was just a bad opening number with a late posting there in that one. Actually seeing money against Patrick Corbin here today. That's another early start. Drew Pomerantz going for the Giants. Weird to see Patrick Corbin getting faded. That's certainly something I didn't expect. Chris Paddock taking money again here today for the Padres. That's 4 of 4 starts for him that he's been steamed. Saw Ivan Nova take some money for the White Sox against the Tigers. There's a little bit of uncertainty as to whether or not Yoan Moncada would be in the lineup for the White Sox. He is. Seeing that, I think, caused the line move out there after he got hit in the head with an errant throw yesterday. Moncada's having a breakout year. You know, if you think he's not going to be in the lineup for the White Sox, then you'll see their lines plummet a little bit. The fact that he's in there saw some money come in on the White Sox. So my pick for Thursday, pretty slim pickings here overall. 5 day games, 6 night games, some big numbers. I'm going to take the Mariners tonight. I'm going to take them in a bounce back spot against the Angels coming off of a near miss last night against the Rangers. We were on the Rangers, so happy that one held up. But yeah, I mentioned above about the Mariners. You know, they faced the Astros and the Indians. It's hard to hit the pitchers for those guys. Again, Verlander, Cole, Bauer, Bieber, Carrasco, 5 of the top 10 guys in the American League, in my estimation. Tonight, they face a much different kind of pitcher in Chris Stratton. I'll take the Mariners tonight. I know Felix is scary, but the Mariners offense should be able to get back on track here, facing some lesser competition. All right, let's preview the weekend ahead here. 5 series in the spotlight for me, beginning with the Dodgers and the Brewers. This one starts tonight. Julio Urias making his last start bullpen after this. Zach Davies going for the Brewers. Ross Stripling, Ulys Chacin tomorrow. Clayton Kershaw, Freddie Peralta Saturday. Kenta Maeda, Brandon Woodruff on Sunday. So far, Miller Park playing very, very small. 12.7 runs per game at Miller Park so far this season. Playing a very, very small ballpark right now up there in Milwaukee. Rematch of last weekend's series. You know, I'm not surprised to see people looking to fade Zach Davies today. He had 8 hits allowed in that start against the Dodgers. 7 of them were singles. 1 was a solo home run. The flip side here is that the Brewers own left-handed pitching. They get 2 of them in this series in Urias and Kershaw. I considered the over tonight, wound up staying off of it. We'll see if that's a mistake. But a tough second start here for Kershaw in a very, very challenging environment. Now, on the Brewers' side of things, you know, they're sending 4 righties at the Dodgers. The righties, you know, they're kind of across the map. Chacin, very heavy slider usage, better with the secondary stuff. Should be an interesting matchup here for the Dodgers and the Brewers this weekend. Phillies and the Rockies. Zach Eflin, Kyle Freeland today. Vince Velasquez, Herman Marquez tomorrow. Aaron Nola, Antonio Senzatella Saturday. Jared Eichhoff getting the call up here in place of Nick Pivetta for Sunday's game. John Gray going for the Rockies in that one. Kyle Freeland and Herman Marquez have had a couple of tough outings at Coors Field so far. John Gray, that positive regression candidate. Line move will be coming on Sunday. The question is, can the Rockies get this offense going at home? I'm not sure. You know, I'm not entirely sure. They do get 4 right-handers here. So, you know, we'll see if that hurts them a little bit. I think they are a lineup that should be a little bit better against lefties as the year goes along. Eflin, not a lot of experience at Coors Field. Same thing for Velasquez. Same thing for Nola and Eichhoff. So, tough place to pitch if you haven't pitched there before. Freeland and Marquez, though, I think the Rockies need 2 really good starts here from them. Both guys got knocked around in their lone outings at Coors Field. I think they need to be better, and we'll see if that is the case here on Thursday and Friday. All right, so obviously I sound a little bit different here as I'm wrapping up this look ahead at the weekend. Blog Talk Radio deciding to kick me off, but doing what I can here to finish up this segment, have to do it over my cell phone. So my apologies for the different audio level. I'll do what I can from an editing standpoint here. But looking at this series between the Mets and the Cardinals, you've got Jason Vargas, very short leash, pulled in the first inning of his last start. Not sure where he's at mentally right now, going up against Adam Wainwright, who's had a couple of pretty good outings in a row. I've got to figure we see a line move on Wainwright there in that one, even though he's a little bit scary of a guy to back as well. Jacob DeGrom, Miles Mikolas on Saturday. Noah Syndergaard, Dakota Hudson on Sunday. Hudson's allowed a lot of hard contact this year. Regression hit in his last start. We'll probably see a Mets line move on Sunday with Syndergaard going up here against Hudson. Look, the Cardinals have made lots of high-velocity contact. They've had a lot of success, but a lot of that is against fastball-heavy starting pitchers. The Mets don't really have that here with DeGrom and Syndergaard. And if those guys throw a lot of fastballs, a couple of the better fastballs in Major League Baseball. So I think this is a really interesting series for a variety of different reasons. A Cardinals bullpen in line for regression, a Mets bullpen that should probably be a little bit better than it is. I think this could be an interesting series.
I wouldn't mind taking a Mets series price here in this one, and may end up with some looks on the Mets here on Saturday and Sunday with DeGrom and Syndergaard going up against the Cardinals. Another series on my radar here for this weekend, the Red Sox and the Rays. I talked already about the Red Sox and their scuffling offense. Well, now they face an elite pitching staff with stuff for days. Now, they do avoid Blake Snell on the DL for a fractured toe. We'll probably see an opener on Friday for the Rays. Eduardo Rodriguez going for the Red Sox. And Eduardo Rodriguez has been awful so far this season. Rick Porcello, Charlie Morton, same thing for Porcello. He's been really bad. Then David Price, Tyler Glasnow on Sunday. The thing about this series, and really the thing about the Rays in general, is that they have a well-defined home field advantage at Tropicana Field when they take on really good offensive teams, because the ball does not carry well at Tropicana Field. The Rays have maximized their home field advantage, hitting a lot of ground balls, going opposite field, as we've talked about already. Sort of wonder if that'll play out here again with the Rays using the Trop to their advantage and the Red Sox just in bad offensive form right now, taking on an opener, and then Charlie Morton and Tyler Glasnow. Two guys with really, really good stuff. You can't take Boston here. If you think Boston can shut down the Rays, you maybe look at some unders, but probably not a series that I'll be too invested in. Finally, one more series to take a look at here, the Braves and the Indians. Tuki Toussaint, Corey Kluber on Friday, Julio Teheran, Trevor Bauer Saturday, Max Fried and Trevor Bauer on, or excuse me, Shane Bieber on Sunday. That is ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. 7 o'clock first pitch for that one, but the Braves and the Indians both off on Monday. So no situational angles to consider from Sunday Night Baseball. Atlanta's got a strong offense, but we'll see what the Indians pitching staff gives them here, as the Indians are very clearly winning with pitching. Big start for Corey Kluber. Corey Kluber has not looked good over his last few outings. I talked about him as a guy that I was worried about coming into the season. I'm still concerned about that here going forward with him. Tough lineup here. I think Bauer and Bieber will be okay. I think they'll have success against this Braves lineup. Kluber is the one that I'm worried about. But I will say this. Given the weather forecast for this series, I would expect some unders. Winds blowing in from the north on Friday and Saturday. Bad weather, cooler temperatures. If they get the games in here and they'll try to force them with interleague play, I think you're looking at some unders here in this series. Obviously, I'm worried about Kluber on Friday with the problems that he's had. But the wind will be blowing in. As long as he's not walking guys again, probably a good spot for the under on Friday. Certainly a spot for the under on Saturday. With Teheran being a fly ball guy on a very bad night for hitting fly balls, Bauer with all of his weapons, I think Saturday's under is very likely to be a play for me. And then we'll see what Sunday has in store, as the weather is supposed to be a little bit better there in that ESPN telecast. So, again, my apologies for the show kicking off here a little bit late. Having to call back in with the phone and a couple different audio levels and things of that sort. But glad I was able to get this one finished for you. We'll be on the air again on Monday with another edition of the Bettors Box and the Monday Mailbag. Tuesday, an NFL draft show. And likely here this Friday, a UFC segment with Christian Pina for the Fight Night event coming up this weekend. So that'll do it for me. Again, questions for the Monday Mailbag at Skating Dry Pods on Twitter or Adam at bangthebook.com. And also to get on the notes for the show, Adam@bangthebook.com. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.